there's no real reason why you can't at all. The only thing that would be holding you back is like self-limiting beliefs, because anybody can do it. I always used to think that, well, I was just overweight. It's just me, that's my genetics. I'm kind of like, I'm just meant to be overweight. My sisters, they're leaner than me because they take after my dad, or I take after my mom. That's why I hold more weight. And it's just like, that's just the thing. And that's what was told to me through my childhood. It's like, well, that's just you. But obviously, if I just believed that, then that's kind of what I would have been.
My name is Leigh Farnason. My brother Anders and I are on a mission to help 1 million vegans get into the best shape of their lives. We firmly believe that the more healthy and fit vegans there are in the world, the faster veganism will spread. Let's work together to inspire change, spread compassion, and challenge the status quo. Welcome to the Vegan Gym Podcast. Hey, what's going on? My name is Leigh Farnason, and I'm joined today by Coach Mark, an awesome coach on our team. So, Mark, it's awesome to have you here.
Thanks, Leigh. It's nice to be here.
Awesome. So today we're going to get into kind of your journey. You have a really interesting journey when it comes to health and fitness and nutrition. So we're going to get into that. And also, I want to pull out some of your top tips and figure out how we can help people to just thrive on a plant-based diet. So, Mark, I'd love to start kind of at the beginning of your fitness journey. You used to be in a pretty dark place, and I'd love to hear kind of where were you? Where did this all start, and how did we get here?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to share. Basically, I was like extremely overweight, very self-conscious about the way that I looked. And it was obviously all down to my own doing, you know, looking back at it now in hindsight, you have 20/20 vision. A lot of it came down to inactivity and poor diet. So I would be really inactive to the point where I would maybe walk to the car. That would be the only activity that I got. Other than that, I would just be driving around with my friends, kind of like goofing off, not really doing any type of physical activity at all. And obviously with that, I would be eating a lot of junk food and just overeating in general. So within about the space of probably about a year or two, I ended up putting on a lot of weight very fast. I'd always held a little bit of weight through school, but I definitely gained like a crazy amount of weight in a short period of time. And that was mostly, again, because no activity from stopping school, doing sports, and then just combine that with like a really poor diet. Like I just skyrocketed with body fat. So then it was kind of, what do I do from there? So I took like a step back and I was like, okay, I need to figure out what's going to be the best way for me to lose weight. And I had no knowledge of nutrition whatsoever. So I was like, well, if I just stick to three meals, I'll just do breakfast, lunch, dinner, and I'll just have no snacks. I'll just, you know, take it down like a basic approach like that. And I'd done that. And that in combined with, it's kind of lucky, I got a job in working in like a garden center. I was, you know, just running around moving pots and plants and things like that. And luckily, that job obviously required me to be on my feet quite a lot. So I was always walking around. I probably was getting about maybe 15 to 20,000 steps per day. So looking back again, it just shows me the importance of like movement and how powerful that is. Even if it's not directly in the gym lifting weights, like movement by itself is just so powerful in terms of burning calories. So that was kind of where I was. I looked at myself, I didn't feel good. I was trying to think of a strategy the best that I could with what I had at the time in terms of the knowledge that I had. And yeah, that was kind of like where I was and what actually got me into losing weight and what was the initial catalyst that kind of got things moving forward.
So what sports did you do through school? Would you have considered yourself to be an athlete kind of through school?
No, I used to do like play football or soccer. That was like the big one. Obviously growing up in the UK, like that's like the most popular sport. We used to do like a little bit with the team. So it was mostly like training, but we weren't too serious about that. It was more just like small like kicking the ball around in lunch breaks, you know, after school, little things like that. It wasn't serious. I definitely was far from an athlete. I was always kind of like weaker, like upper body strength, you know, when your friends are kind of jumping around, they're climbing up on fences. Like I always used to struggle with that. I was always kind of a little bit weaker, especially upper body. So yeah, I was never an athlete by any stretch. And to be honest, when I was really overweight, there was times when we ran around and I think it was about 20, 30 yards or something like that. And I was so out of breath and so out of shape, I literally threw up after that, like that short run. So yeah, definitely probably like a polar opposite from what you would consider an athlete. It was quite bad.
So you ended up getting to about 100 pounds overweight. Yeah. And if we'll talk about the process of losing all of that weight, but as you saw, or maybe felt, if you weren't weighing yourself, as you kind of saw the scale creep up or felt the weight creep up, what was kind of going through your mind through that process? And yeah, I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, to be honest, I didn't feel great about myself. I wasn't weighing myself, you know, like meticulously at all, but you know when you're putting on weight and you're a young guy, you're kind of coming up through adolescence, you kind of want to be out there, you know, like socializing with friends. But I would kind of sit back a little bit from that because I just felt self-conscious, to be honest. I would have clothes on. I would always wear baggy clothes no matter what temperature. It could be, you know, like so hot summer day outside. I'd always have a hoodie on because I would feel so self-conscious. And it got to the point, like in terms of the worst moment in terms of like my insecurities was kind of when I was at home, and there's nobody around, and like in my own bedroom, I couldn't sit like in my own presence without a t-shirt on. I was so self-conscious about the way that I looked and how overweight I was, even though there was nobody around. I couldn't even sit like, you know, like with a t-shirt off, like in my own presence. So that was kind of like probably the hardest part about like being overweight, is just how insecure you feel about yourself. Like, and it's a very deep thing. Like, I know somebody may have been a little bit overweight, like I don't want to take my t-shirt off at the beach, that's okay, that's fair enough. But like when you are so self-conscious where you don't even want to see yourself like with your t-shirt off, I think that's definitely, you know, I'm not trying to underplay anyone else's insecurities, definitely not, but this is just how like deep my insecurities were. It was like to that point where, yeah, just really just hated myself, hated the way I looked, and yeah, definitely impacted me in some pretty big ways, especially with like my late teens, like early 20s. It was not a fun time.
How did you view food at that time?
Food was probably something that was more of a comfort thing. I think I definitely ate a lot of food based around comfort. Had some situation with, you know, I kind of moved out of my parents' house when I was in my late teens, and there was some nothing too bad, but it was just kind of like it was a big shift in the way that I was living. So I had no routine and things were a little bit up and down, and I think I definitely leaned on food as a bit of a crutch. So I think that was maybe one of the things that made me eat so much. I remember times when I would kind of go back, I was living with my grandma at the time, and I would kind of on the way back home after eating way too many calories that day anyway, I would go and buy like sweets, you know, candy from the store. And I would buy like 2-3 bags and I would go back and I would sit and eat it. I would finish the whole lot and then I would be like, okay, now jump back in the car and I would go back, and there's no reason to. And so I think like in that time, I was definitely doing some self-soothing with food. And even like, you know, years like gone on, that's something I do find myself falling back into. So I think that was kind of how I viewed food. It was something that is, you know, palatable, you eat it, you feel good. And maybe I was kind of riding off those, you know, like happy endorphins which you can get from like highly palatable food.
So had you, prior to that, had you had any issues with food or?
Not particularly. Like, my diet was never amazing by any stretch. Definitely low in protein. I think that's just kind of the way that we just used to eat. I would eat a lot of pasta, but maybe back then, obviously I wasn't vegan, there might be some cheese on it, but there wasn't lots of like lean protein sources at all. So it would always be more on like the pasta, the cereals, like more like carb heavy, fat heavy. So I definitely didn't understand nutrition at all, but I was probably never, probably because I was also, you know, living with my mom, she was a little bit more, you know, restrictive on kind of the food she, like she would buy. So I was probably limited to some extent in terms of like what I could eat. You know, I couldn't just go out to McDonald's and buy foods and all that, like all the like junk food every day. But yeah, like I said, I was always had a little bit extra weight on me, probably because of the way that I would typically eat, but it was never something which was like, you know, I wasn't like obese through high school and stuff like that. I was always just the chunky kid. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I used to be hopelessly addicted to cereal.
Yeah, cereal's too good.
I used to eat a ridiculous amount of cereal. In fact, there was a phase I had. Yeah, I had a very strange diet kind of through my teenage years, and I think it. I don't know if I know that your parents are separated. I don't know if that was part of kind of the move out process, but when my parents separated, when we were, I was 14 at the time, and then I moved with my mom, my brother's sister, to a totally new state. Lost kind of all my connections with friends. I was pre-Facebook and kind of all these ways of staying connected. And I just kind of started controlling food, and I did it in more of kind of a restrictive way versus just kind of eating for comfort. Yeah. I would control that because I didn't feel like I had control of other aspects of my life.
Yeah.
And one of the phases that I went through my teenage years was an addiction to cereal. Like I remember this one vacation where we went down to see my dad's parents who were living in Georgia at the time. And basically all of the luggage that I packed was cereal in Ziploc bags.
Wow, that's a commitment.
And it wasn't necessarily healthy cereal either. I thought that I was healthy in this kind of in choosing these certain cereals. And I guess it was healthier than donuts, yeah. but not certainly far from healthy. Anyways, yeah, that's I guess in some way I experienced a little bit of the opposite side of that spectrum, yeah, in going through some challenging times growing up.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird how like you kind of do that. I think that's something when people are going through challenging times and, you know, maybe dealing with things at home, whether it's, you know, just, you know, chaos at home, whatever's happening, you move in across like the state, or you move into a different state, like you said, or there's just like lots of, like your whole life maybe has been uprooted, and it's kind of puts you in a state where you're lost. So I can understand what you've done there, where you're feeling lost and need to find some control, and you sort of like, I'll control it with taking food in. But yeah, for me, it was kind of, maybe I wasn't as conscious of that and not trying to take control. I was just kind of like, not really aware of it. I was just kind of mindlessly just eating food, you know, subconsciously just trying to soothe maybe some pain that was inside of me. Yeah.
Was there kind of a turning point that you can point to where it was just like, wow, I need to turn things around? Or was it really as simple as just you got a more active job and the weight started coming off and you started slowly kind of having some wins and realizing, oh, I can accomplish some things within health and fitness that I didn't think I could accomplish? Was there any distinct turning point where you're just like, I need a change, or was it a little bit more gradual?
I think it was quite gradual. I can't think of, there must have been a point when I realized I need to take control of my diet, but definitely when it come to the the activity side and getting the job. That was probably like, I needed work, you know, I needed like to earn money. I got this job through a friend. And then it was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, to be honest. And it was because without that, I don't know how I would have got into activity, especially not for maybe another couple of years. And I'll talk about like how I got into like training and lifting weights, but it definitely was the unseen like driver that actually got my body burning calories. Otherwise, it would have been very inactive. I think mostly I'm the type of person that tends to be slightly inactive. You know, I'm not always wanting to run around. I don't know, my NEAT naturally would be crazy high. I'm not super like active and motivated when I'm like talking or just around the house. You know, I'll sit and chill. It's just something that I'll do. So I have to really get out and move. Otherwise, I'll just be hovering around about basal metabolic rate. I'm not going to do too much beyond that unless I really try. So yeah, I think it was kind of gradual with the activity. I think there was probably more of a conscious effort to control nutrition. And that's why today I believe that nutrition is like one of the biggest factors for weight loss. Obviously, movement is like definitely up there with it. But to me, like nutrition is like the biggest factor. And that's what really got me into wanting to become a nutritionist and study nutrition, is just because I knew even from the early days when I didn't have any information or knowledge about this, it was the nutrition that made like the biggest factor. Because, you know, you can do 15,000 steps, but if you go and eat all the food like at home or, you know, at the store, it's very easy to eat those calories back. So I think, yeah, probably more of a turning point, although I can't pinpoint the exact moment it was, but it would have been a point where I realized that I need to control the food that I'm taking in. And then with time, it got to the point where I was, okay, I'm losing weight, I'm feeling better. Let's take this up a notch and let's go to the gym. Let's start training. And luckily I had a friend who had like a whole garage like dedicated to that. He had like a small setup, but it was good enough to do just to get the juices flowing, get some muscle build, doing some upper body work, mostly, you know, chest, biceps, the standard.
Yeah.
And then it kind of developed from there.
So what did you start learning about nutrition when you realized the power of nutrition? What were some of the principles that you began implementing at that point? Were you looking at calories? What were you kind of focusing on?
So yeah, the big thing for nutrition with me was, I think like most people, it's like, I'm going to eat healthy. You know, you're eating healthy, you're trying to make the healthiest choices. So I used to do that. I would kind of go for a workout and then I would be like, okay, I need the healthy food. And again, back then I wasn't vegan. So, you know, what's healthy? Chicken. Everyone is the go-to. So I would get chicken, but then I would get like a salad bar. So there's like a supermarket chain, like a grocery store chain, and they have like this fresh salad bar, and you'd be like, well, salad's healthy. But then you would load that up with all of the pasta and the potatoes, all covered in, you know, oils and like cream sauces, everything like that. So I'll probably do a workout, burn about 200 calories, and then go eat about 1500 calories in like a post-workout meal. But it's, you know, it's under the tagline of healthy because it was a salad bar. So I used to do that for a bit, and, you know, probably through some error on some days, you know, where maybe I didn't eat as much, and just complete like luck, really, eating healthy. I think that is, it is by chance. If you just go, I'm going to eat healthy, and you have no understanding of nutrition, it genuinely comes down to chance. Because like a bag of nuts is healthy, you know, it is genuinely a healthy option. But if you eat the whole bag, you know, you've had nearly 1,000 calories. So it depends on what foods that you have. And obviously I made some changes like that, but it definitely, after that initial weight loss, which I probably lost maybe like 40-ish pounds, maybe 50 pounds of it, like about half of that, it's pretty much a plateau. And I wasn't really going that far with weight loss until I started to get really serious about education, in terms of nothing really serious in like the sense of reading studies and like, you know, going to school. It was just more going online, reading articles, and I'm talking like basic articles like men's health and things like just the first like things that would pop up on like a Google search. And I would just read through these, like open one article, go to the next one, go to the next one, go to the next one. And I would get like almost a bit like not obsessed, but I would get like, I would just really wanted it to I really wanted to make a change. So I was just like, I'm not just going to take this one article and be like, oh, well, that's what I do. I'll go to the next one and I'll just keep reading and reading and reading. And what I found is the internet is quite a strange place in terms of information. You could read one article, could say one thing, the next article could say the other thing. But if you read enough of these like articles or blogs, should I say, you'll find that there's a kind of a running theme. So if they say, this is the 10 ways to get in the best shape, get abs, or whatever it might be, you'll find that one or two of those things across all of them will be like the same, and they'll actually, they'll match across those different blogs. And I was like, okay, well, obviously there's some like misinformation here, but all 20 of these articles have said calories, for example, are a big thing. So I was like, okay, let's dive into that. And once I learned about calories, to be honest, that was like, that was a light bulb moment. I was like, you know, the heavens open, God just come down, shook my hands, like, there you go, that's the information that you need. And as soon as I learned about that, I was like, okay, let's do it. Worked out my calories, wrote a meal plan, stuck to that. And then it was like, yeah, absolutely game changing, to be honest, when it come to results. Just from learning about that one simple thing, instead of just eating healthy, it's now eat the right amount of calories that my body needs. And yeah, I ended up getting into really fantastic shape after that.
So that's what propelled you to lose the next 50 yeah. pounds.
That's like from me being really like overweight, lost some weight just naturally from moving around a little bit more, to then basically getting down to about 11% body fat and yeah, like having visible abs. So yeah, that was the game changing, on the turning point, was understanding like calories in, calories out. And then yeah, it was much faster results from that point on.
Awesome. So how did your training evolution and learning process play into that accelerated transformation?
So with training, so let's say I started out just moving around at this job that I had in like a garden center, lots of steps, lots of activity, but no real like weightlifting. Then got into the next phase, which was very intermittent, on and off weightlifting at my friend's like garage. Again, not very serious, kind of just having the opportunity to go when obviously he's training, because it was his place. So maybe we do that a couple times per week, maybe three times. And then we joined a gym. So me and my other friend, who like one of my best friends growing up, he actually taught me a lot about weightlifting. So I'm very thankful to have him in my life. He was on the opposite end of the scale, just always in good shape, like abs, yeah, round, just like, you know, he knew what he was doing when it come to fitness, and definitely like weightlifting. So I used to go and train with him, and he got me like really into bodybuilding. So like, you know, the typical chest day, arm day, you know, like doing that, the bro split, and got me into that. And I made some good results from that. Obviously, he never used to have to worry about nutrition, because he was always just lean. His appetite was never crazy. If anything, he was always trying to force feed to gain weight. And I was always the opposite. So it was kind of like we were polar opposites going in the gym. We were doing like two separate things. And then from that point, I started to train by myself. And I think that was probably the moment when my training started to really develop, when I was training by myself, because now I wasn't relying on anyone else. It was like, okay, now it's me. I'm going to have to read and learn to do this properly. And as soon as I started to do that, I think I got to the point where I was just learning to do different exercises, different workout routines. Maybe I would copy some from Men's Health, you know, standard stuff, but then I would start writing up my own workouts and just started building upon that. Just over, this is over the course of a few years, this is not like overnight stuff. So yeah, that was kind of the development into training. And then I was training at a good level. You'd say like good amateur sort of level. Wasn't amazing. Like if I was to look back at the workout programs now, I'd be a little bit like, oh, that's a crazy amount of volume. You're doing way too much. But it was, you know, it was good. I was targeting all of the right areas. I started to make a good change with my body. And then I was getting in good shape. I'd learned a little bit about nutrition, and I was like, I'd kind of like transformed my body at that point. And I was like, okay, well, you know, I know a little bit about training. I know about calories, like energy in, energy out, and how powerful that is to help somebody lose weight. I was like, okay, why not like try and make this like a living? Like, I'm really passionate about this. If I remember being out, you know, lifestyle wasn't exactly amazing all the time. You'd be sitting at parties and everyone would be like, oh, you've lost so much weight. And I'd be sitting there like 11 p.m. at night, maybe a couple of drinks. And, you know, I'd be sitting working out everyone's calories, like, no, just do this, do that. And I'd be giving everyone macros, like just like silly things when you think back at it. And I was just like, I really love this. And I know what it's done to me, because obviously I'm brushing over that, but from that point of when I was really overweight to this point where I was starting to think about becoming a personal trainer, it was like a huge like mindset shift, and yeah, just a complete different person all around for the better. And it was, yeah, at that point I was like, let's do it, let's get my PT qualification. And yeah, and that's where it got up to.
Yeah, I love that story, and it's always amazing to look back and see that the adversity that we go through, it really creates opportunities and inspires us to want to help people get through the same things that we have struggled through. And I think that's really awesome. What would you say to Mark 100 pounds ago?
100 pounds.
If you can go back and right before you started that transformation and lost all that weight, what would you say to that person or someone in those shoes?
So now, if it's said to myself or say to someone else, to myself, I maybe wouldn't be as kind as what I'd say to somebody else. I definitely would say, like, just to wake up, you know, like I was very unconscious. I was kind of like go with the wind, you know, like very take it as it comes, never really like thinking about what am I going to do with my life? Like, what am I going to do about anything really? It was just got wake up. Oh, I'm alive. And I wouldn't really think much beyond that. It wasn't a very forward thinking sort of person back then. So I would probably say wake up a little bit. Take control of your life. Don't leave everything up to chance. Obviously, you know, sort out your diet, you know, control the food intake, get into the gym. And I would just reassure myself that by doing that, you will actually become the person that you want to be, or at least you'll improve yourself. You will feel better about yourself, that the efforts that you put in will not be in vain. You'll always get rewards and benefits from doing that. So yeah, that's what I'll probably just go and motivate myself to, just to try harder and to take control of my life so that I actually had the power to change the situation that I was in at that time, which, you know, there's some elements of being helpless and feeling pretty low in those moments, kind of like, well, this is where I'm supposed to be. I'm stuck in this. It's not something I can change. But that, obviously that's not true. You can always change and develop. And yeah, that would probably be the biggest thing I would say to myself. But obviously that's a little bit deeper. But some people listening may take that on board and they may feel like that resonates with them as well. It probably will. But if it was to say it to somebody else, again, I wouldn't go too deep with it. If I was just meeting them for the first time, at least, I would just say, what do you want? And then from that, I think you've always got to have an idea of what do you want. And then from there, it's, you just create a plan and put that into place to get you there. You know, if I wanted to climb Mount Everest, okay, that's what I want to do. How do I do that? How do I what do I have to read? What do I have to learn? What do I have to do to climb Mount Everest? And then I would just go about doing that.
So you would say basically, you need this, you deserve this, and you can do it.
Yeah, 100%.
But we just need to start putting in the work. We need to figure out a plan. We need to understand what you truly want from this journey and where you want to go. And then let's just start putting one foot in front of the other and get there.
100%. Yeah, it's all about a plan. No matter what you want to do, you've got to put a plan into place. If everybody deserves to get the thing that they want, but they only deserve to get it if they put a plan into place and actually see it through, in which case you probably don't deserve it because you haven't put in the work, especially when you have the information available to you. It's so easy right now to get online, learn about the information that you want, you know, reach out to a coach, or, you know, it the information is right there. If you want to lose weight specifically, if we're talking about that, there's no real reason why you can't at all. The only thing that would be holding you back is like self-limiting beliefs, because anybody can do it. I always used to think that, well, I was just overweight. It's just me. That's my genetics. I'm kind of like, I'm just meant to be overweight. My sisters, they're leaner than me because they take after my dad, or I take after my mom. That's why I hold more weight. And it's just like, that's just the thing. And that's what was told to me through my childhood. It's like, well, that's just you. But obviously, if I just believed that, then that's kind of what I would have been. But yeah, obviously I didn't want to like believe that. I made a change, so it's there for everybody to have, but you just have to be willing to do something a little bit different, do something which may be hard, but if you do it and you see it through, you will definitely get the results and the rewards from doing that.
How did veganism enter the picture in your journey?
So veganism, for me, I'd been a trainer at this point for probably 3 years. So I'd been training people one-on-one, like helping them with, you know, weight loss and improving the fitness. And then I started to notice a lot of things online about like veganism, and mostly around the ethical side of things. It was mostly around the ethical side of things, when there would be lots of extreme images shown to me, which obviously are upsetting. They're quite jarring when you see those things, and it makes you question, like, what am I actually doing with like my diet? Because, you know, if you're like a standard sort of personal trainer and you're trying to get in shape and you're helping people to get in shape and you're going for that more bodybuilder style of approach, which is obviously, you know, it's a good approach to changing the way your body looks. It's chicken and rice, you know, it's a standard egg whites, eggs, it's all based on that. And it's, I need to get protein. I need to get like so much protein, to the point when sometimes it's too much protein. So animal sources are always a big thing with that. So I would say that there was definitely a bit of like cognitive dissonance in regards to learning this new information and kind of how I was living my life, because it was just a complete different perspective. So that's kind of what I started seeing, things like that. I think that was a big realization when I saw some like sheep or lambs in a field. And this was probably the biggest realization for me, and I always remember this point, was I saw those lambs in the field and I was kind of like, oh, how cute. They're just running around the field, they're living a nice life. And then it kind of like dawned on me that, like, okay, yeah, it looks like they're living a nice life, but they're just waiting to be slaughtered. And I kind of like, for the first time, because if you go to the UK, you'll see animals, cows, sheep, and like across fields, it's quite normal, but you never really recognize it. It's kind of like, okay, yeah, that's what they're for, but it never deeply, for me at least anyway, never really deeply like got to me or understood why they were there. And then, yeah, I just realized, oh wow, how sad is that? That's like those like lambs that I'm thinking how cute they are, they're just gonna like run around the field living their life. And I was like, no, they're actually living like a lie of a life, if that makes sense, where they're not really not really there to have fun and to enjoy themselves. They're just there to be killed at some point and to be eaten. And so that was a big thing for me. And I was like, oh, that I'm not too sure about like consuming meat anymore. Again, as most people do, you push it to the back of your mind and you're like, okay, I'm just going to continue. And about a year later, it just got too much. Like all of the things I was seeing, the different perspective that I had in regards to consuming animal products, just got, yeah, too much. And one night I was sitting at a friend's and I was eating this chicken thigh. So I'd bought this chicken thigh from the grocery store. It's like a hot food counter. And I was sitting eating it and as like, you know, a few bites in, and I just looked at it for what it was for the first time. It was not food. It was actually the leg of a chicken. There was like a, I don't know, have you seen those weird like, what are the optical illusions, you know, when you're looking at something and you don't see it, you don't see it, then all of a sudden it just clicks. It was that same thing. It was just looking at just food and then all of a sudden it just clicked and it was just like, oh wow, this is like an animal's body part. And I just couldn't do it. I put it down and I was just like, that's it. And I went vegan overnight.
Wow, that's a cool story. I love hearing people who make that switch driven by ethics, because I think that's just so respectable. And when I went vegan, or at least when I went plant-based, like the catalyst for my vegan journey was all focused on health. And then I watched Earthlings and that really opened my eyes. But I probably wouldn't have watched Earthlings if I hadn't first gone plant-based and cared about my health, and maybe I'd still be kind of living with those blinders on and not understanding what I'm actually contributing to.
Potentially. It's always hard to say. I think that if somebody is, no matter how you get into veganism, you will, say if you come in from a health point, you will understand the ethical point of view. If you come in from an ethical, you'll then understand about the health point. But I think that if anybody comes in purely for health and then really understands and resonates with the ethical side, I think that more than likely you would have got to that point. Like let's say if you didn't have, you know, like the health scares and things like that, you probably would have got to that point. Because if you're open enough to see it eventually, you would have been like that type of person that would have, you know, maybe would have took slightly longer, but it would have definitely got to that point once that information was more like prevalent and like in your face, so to speak, which it is now. But luckily, it's getting like shared a lot. I think you would have likely, it would have got you in that way. Because I know some people that are fully plant-based and they don't care about the animals even now. So it just obviously depends on what gets somebody into it. And yeah, like I say, I would expect that if you come in for purely health reasons and then it opens your eyes a little bit more to the ethical side and you really resonate with that and you're like, oh wow, like this just expanded veganism for me. Now it's not just about my health, it's what I'm also, what I can do for to save the animals and what I can do for the planet. I feel like it would have got you eventually, you know, you're kind of open to it in some way.
So you were training people at the time when you went vegan.
Yeah.
So were you helping people at all with the nutrition side of things? And if so, what started, I guess I think about what would I have done if I was a personal trainer who went vegan and or some kind of coach and I was doing some nutrition for my clients and I went vegan, and then I'm just thinking I cannot in good conscience recommend any animal-based products to my clients. It's, what was that like for you if you were doing nutrition?
Yeah, that was quite tough. And it's always something that I did struggle with. I think I tried to like get around it the best that I could. There was times when I kind of had to write somebody a meal plan. And that would tear me up. That would definitely be some strange feelings inside of me when I'm writing down like eat, I don't know, 100 grams of beef, and I was just like, oh no, I can't do that to a cow. So I would like scribble it out, and I would be like, let's do a chicken. I'll be like, I'm so sorry, chicken, but it's like, I don't know, like it's the hierarchy of sentience sort of thing. It's like, obviously chickens get it so bad, but I was like, that's what it got to, where I was kind of like trying to like weigh up like what is more worthy of life. It's actually horrible now I think of it and I say it out loud. It's really bad. And I started becoming really uncomfortable with that. So what I would do is, the best way to do it is, because you know, I couldn't control what my clients would eat, I would always say try and incorporate, you know, plant-based foods. But it got to the point where I was like, I'm just gonna have to say, this is your calories, this is your macros, here's my fitness pal, kind of, you know, do what you need to do, here's a list of like protein options. And I would have like plant-based and animal-based, because obviously that was their diet preference, and I would try and encourage it as much as possible. But I'd started to try and get out of directly prescribing animal-based foods, just because it was it was obviously a conflict of like my ethical choices.
Yeah, that's a difficult situation. And yeah, I think there, yeah, lots of people, especially early in their vegan journey, maybe would kind of view it that same way and think, okay, where's the hierarchy of sentience or whatever here? And then you get a ways into your vegan journey and realize, hey, there's no way to prescribe any kind of hierarchy there.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I think maybe going on, if I was still like, you know, I wasn't working for the vegan gym, it would be more, here's like maybe move people more vegetarian, or it's always a difficult one. Obviously, when somebody signed up to work with me, my main priority was them, you know. So I'm always somebody that would try and protect animals as much as possible, but when somebody comes into my circle of care, let's say, I'm going to look out for them. And of course I'm not going to try and force anybody else to eat the way that I eat if that's not right for them at that moment. So I would always kind of, okay, I'm not 100% happy with this, but I respect you as a human and you have your own choices, and I want to make sure that you get what you want. And who knows, in the future you might change your way of thinking. But yeah, my first and foremost like duty was to provide value to that person. But it obviously, that was when I was sitting writing these meal plans, at times I wasn't 100% happy with that, but I had a duty of care to them before the animals. But then with time, obviously learn about the vegan gym, and then that was just like, wow, this is like the best possible thing like for me. Not only do I help people with weight loss and fitness, which I love and had been doing for like 7 or 8 years previous, but now it's fully vegan, fully plant-based, and it's just like obviously an amazing company, and everything was just like, wow, this is too good to be true. And yeah, and then next thing you know, applied, had the interview with Leif, and then now we're sitting recording this podcast together. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool to hear that story. There have been actually a handful of coaches who have come in the team and said that same thing. Oh, this seemed too good to be true. And in fact, I was talking with Coach Emma a few days ago for another episode, and I was telling her how there were lots of people that I just DM'd, like coaches I would DM, and a bunch of them thought that it was just a scam or like some MLM kind of pyramid scheme to like sell some vegan supplement or whatever. Yeah, so
selling some like dodgy tofu or something.
Yeah. Like anyway, so yeah, that's cool. I'd love to hear, what are you most proud of accomplishing so far in your vegan fitness journey?
So the thing I'd probably say I was most proud of is just being able to transition like fully like vegan overnight. Obviously I didn't have a lot of information on that, and that was a big fear, like I'm gonna lose muscle, you know, I'm gonna get weak. And to be honest, I was willing to do that because like my ethical like standpoint was so strong that I didn't really care that much. So I kind of fell to the wayside a little bit. Obviously, I still wanted to train, but I was kind of like, you know, if I have to sacrifice a little bit of muscle, I have to have a B12 supplement for the rest of my life. Like, big deal. I believe in this, and I know that I don't need to eat like that. And just eating animals just so I can have an extra inch on my biceps are pretty vain. And it's not a very, obviously not an ethical thing to do. I don't think it makes much sense. It's not very fair on the animals. Like, that's their life, is just so you can have an extra inch on your bicep. It seems a little bit silly when you like put it like that. So yeah, it was kind of still being able to train, still being able to maintain and then build muscle mass and strength. So I'd say that was a big one, because obviously many people even now today will doubt that you can build muscle as a vegan. You can't maintain strength, and that's obviously, as we know, like all the research and literature shows, that's definitely not the case. But when I first got into it, it was kind of like, okay, this might happen, because there wasn't as much information back then, and there was definitely a lack of knowledge on the subject that personally that I had at that time. So yeah, that was a big one for me, is still being able to build muscle, be as strong, if not stronger, and build more muscle than I'd ever had. So, and I also managed to diet down, get very lean, about probably just 10% or so, in summer, like my midpoint of my PT career, when I was doing like before and after transformations, or when I was putting things up on Instagram, got very lean. First shred as like a veganist about a year after I had went vegan, got in really great shape. So I knew, it was like, it affirmed to myself, okay, this is definitely like possible. I didn't like just lose like, you know, 20 pounds of like lean mass out of nowhere. And I was like, yeah, this is definitely the right thing for me, and the right way forward in terms of just health and fitness for most people, to be honest. Because if you can get in amazing shape and still build muscle, and you're eating more fruits, vegetables, you know, like healthier like foods, and just a lot of like animal-based foods, then why isn't it like the default diet until kind of proven otherwise? So there was that, and then there was also, I did a couple of like fitness let's say endurance challenges. I did like a marathon, which, yeah, that was pretty tough, but that's down to my own lack of a sort of like proper training up until that point. I kind of jumped into it last minute, which obviously, if anyone's listening, don't jump into a marathon last minute. That's never a good idea. But before I'd done that, I'd done a half Ironman, and that was probably the biggest sport in endeavor that I'd kind of like ever done in my entire life, actually. And that was a really cool experience. I'd trained very well for it, been quite disciplined with training, and, you know, finished the half Ironman as I wanted. I got the time that I wanted, and yeah, that was probably the biggest thing that I've accomplished while being vegan in terms of like an actual sport and event. But other than that, I'd say probably the biggest thing, like I said already, is just the building muscle and strength. Like, that's mostly what my interests are. I do like to challenge myself on random things now and again, but me being the overweight kid, one of the big drivers for me is, you know, physical appearance to a certain extent. I want to change the way that I look. I want to lose body fat. I want to build muscle. I want to change the trajectory of my life in terms of what it was supposed to be, you know, or what it could have been, at least. Like, that overweight, shy kid who was just always destined to be the fat guy, the fat kid, and I wanted to change that. And I know that bodybuilding is pretty much as good as you can get in terms of changing the way your body looks. I mean, if you watch bodybuilders on stage, who are the biggest, who's got the best shape, and who like is the leanest? Bodybuilders. And that's because that's what they do. So, you know, if you can copy people in what they do, you want to try and emulate that result, or those successes that those people have, obviously going down that route. So, and that's what's instilled into me. That's one of the biggest factors that I do train. Now, of course, there's health reasons as well, and that's something that, again, you might get into weightlifting to look a certain way, and then you understand, you know, the health benefits around that. But yeah, it's always going to be that core part of me, which is I want to build muscle because I want to look better. I want to feel better. And I think it's not just to be vain. It's more self-confidence and, yeah, just mostly around like self-assurance and just mental health, really, because that was one of the big things around being overweight. I didn't have great mental health at the time. And obviously, if you don't have great mental health, you're very like insecure. It affects everything, even down to like body language, posture. It's a all encompassing thing. So lifting weights, changing the way your body looks is probably one of the best things you can do to help with your mental health as well. And you know, and you could look at that from all different lenses, different angles, in terms of, you know, depression and like anxiety and lots of like ways you could look at it. But even if the only thing it does for you, or I say the only thing it done for me, which it didn't, there was many, many things it done for me. But if the only thing it done was just increase my confidence, so I could actually stand up and, you know, look people in the eye and talk to them and maybe talk to a girl, you know, like little things like that, which was back then was just not an option for me at all. Yeah, that's an amazing reason to do that, just because it will change your life. And there's no way I'd be sitting here right now having this conversation if I never got into lifting weights and trying to lose weight. I'd probably be, I mean, who knows if I'd even be alive, to be honest. Like, I'm 33 right now. I was extremely overweight and I was 18, 19 years old. If that continued to go, what's that, another 15 years, if I'd continued on that same path, I mean, I'd be lucky right now to just have diabetes. I think that would be me getting off light. I would have been in a very bad way physically.
Yeah, I love all the talk about confidence, because that's really been probably the biggest thing that I've gotten out of my training journey. I've totally transformed my body, but more so I've transformed my perspective of myself. And I now carry myself differently. I view myself differently. And that has been totally instrumental in transforming my life. So yeah. And also you touched on this idea that when you went vegan, you weren't sure if you were even going to be able to build muscle, but it didn't matter because this was an ethical decision. And I was actually in the same boat. When I went plant-based, it was all about health. I was just like, I never want to experience going through a serious disease diagnosis again. And that's what propelled the just total focus on healthy nutrition, healthy plant-based whole food nutrition. Then when I went vegan, I started thinking, hey, I would love to challenge the status quo and kind of show people that I am capable of being an athlete. Yeah. Because I had been into lifting prior to being diagnosed with cancer, but I had pretty much at that point just resigned myself to the idea that, okay, yes, this is really healthy, but let's be realistic here. I'm not going to be able to gain any kind of muscle. So maybe I can just kind of maintain my health. Maybe I can get into doing some like endurance athletic stuff. I can continue running. But I decided to really try to figure out the muscle building part of my vegan journey. And then I started proving it to myself. Again, that was about a little, that was a kind of coming up on 9 years actually ago. And so there wasn't that much obvious evidence that this was possible. There are a few people here and there, but
yeah,
nothing really obvious that yes, you can do this on plants and it's possible for everyone. So yeah, I really kind of doubted my ability to build muscle, but thankfully, a kind of plant-based vegan lifestyle can allow you to do what's right in the for the animals, for the planet, but also bring incredible health and really limitless fitness potential to everyone. So yeah, really a win-win-win across the board. What would you say are some of your top nutrition tips that you've learned through your journey?
So top nutrition tips for me, I'm always quite like a big eater. So for me, volume is key, especially, well, no matter if I'm dieting, but probably more so if I'm dieting, like in terms of like in a shred phase, I'm trying to lose weight. But even in a maintenance phase, like volume is key. So when, if you have a big appetite, which you can see, like there could be two different people, take them to an all you can eat buffet. No, one person is going to have two plates and they're going to be like, oh, I'm so full. And like, I'll be on my fourth plate and be like, what? We haven't had dessert yet. So like, I can eat a lot very fast. You probably see me eating like with a team. I can eat faster. It's just something that I do. And obviously I should probably work on that and slow the things down a little bit. And there's obviously new techniques and tricks that I'm going to start trying to use for myself, be a little bit more mindful with that. But at the end of the day, it comes down to like stomach volume, like stomach capacity. And obviously one of the best ways to help yourself out with that in terms of not eating as much calories in one like period when you eat food, would be just thinking about the calorie density of food. So that was a big one for me, really understanding that I could have like a handful of nuts could be like 300 calories, or if I was to make 300 calories of, I don't know, like veggies, broccoli, you know, cabbage, things like that, it would be like so much food that I couldn't even finish it. So that's like a big one for dieting. I think that's, hopefully that is quite well known across the community. It definitely is in like the fitness niche and dieting niche. Hopefully that's pretty widespread. If you're listening to this and you're struggling with over consuming calories, definitely just look into calorie density and just understanding the volume of food you can have for the same amount of calories across the board. That's a big one. Of course, the next tip would be protein intake. So if you want to maintain a healthy weight, or if you want to get down to a healthy weight, if you're hungry all of the time, that's going to be a limiting factor. And obviously volume is one of the things, but the other one is going to be protein as well. So protein is one of the most satiating macronutrients that you can have. There's a list of other benefits as well, you know, like the thermic effect is higher, as well as obviously what it does to lean mass. That's like a complete different topic, but yeah, protein is obviously going to build up your lean mass, so you definitely want to get protein if you want to build muscle. But like in terms of what it does to like your satiety hormones, it's a huge thing. So if you were to have a meal which was like 95% like carbs and fats and then 5% protein, it would not like satiate you. It would not fill you as much as something which was, let's say, 40% protein and the rest made up of carbs and fats. So that's a big one, and that's a big one for me. If I'm hungry, of course I'm gonna eat, and if I eat, I'm gonna eat too many calories, and then that's gonna be you know, very easy to overconsume energy and then store excess body fat. So that's a big one. Make sure you get a high protein diet. And then the other one, which is pretty easy now, especially which now I'm plant-based, is fiber. Fiber is obviously key, you know, for the microbiome, and there's so much on that specifically, and I don't even think it's fully understood right now. It's just kind of like, we think it's good, feed it type of thing. But in terms of satiety, there's definitely clear research that if you increase your fiber intake, it will fill you up. It'll just slow down the digestion system, make you feel fuller for longer. And that's the biggest thing when it comes to weight loss. Obviously, pretty simple. The less calories you can eat, the more beneficial it's going to be for you to lose weight and, of course, to maintain like a healthy body weight. But you know, we want to do this in a way where we're not starving ourselves. Your stomach's always rumbling because you're hungry. So how do we do that? Okay, I'm going to make meals which are high protein, high fiber, low in calories, but high in volume. So if you can just do that and make that like the standard protocol for all of your meals, wherever possible, of course, there's going to be some exceptions. But if you could do that like pretty much as a standard thing, it's going to be very hard for you to actually consume so many calories that you gain weight. So yes, those are the three big ones, like how to balance meals. Then of course, I've already touched on it, was understanding calorie intake, because that's definitely like the biggest one. That's what's going to move the dial more than anything else. But then of course you want to make sure that you actually enjoy the process, because anyone can starve themselves to lose weight, but usually that is, even if you can do that, if you've got great willpower, it will just end up in cravings and risking, you know, going into binge eating patterns and yo-yo dieting. So yeah, understand calories and then try and make yourself as full and as satiated as possible with the understanding of volume, protein, and fiber.
Yeah, those are some great tips. What are some of the most effective strategies that you use to help your clients achieve their health and fitness goals?
So the most effective tips and strategies would be trying to just get people to move more and control their food intake. It just comes down to as simple as that. Now, it's going to look slightly different for each person. You know, the fundamental aspect of that is always going to be true for everyone, but the way that it looks in practice is going to be a little bit different depending on what do you like doing in terms of activity. Some people love hiking, some people love cycling, some people don't like cycling. You know, it's going to be different activities which is more suited for that person. The biggest thing is just movement. If you can move, you will be burning more calories. If you can burn more calories, it's easier to be in a calorie deficit. So movement is key. So I need to find out what the client likes to do in terms of their movement, and then base a plan around that. Obviously, with that, I do try and incorporate some resistance training in there, because if you look at the research is quite clear that if you stimulate the muscle fibers, like, you know, once, ideally maybe 2 times per week, that you will actually see more fat loss across like the period of like a, let's say, 12 to 16 week diet. The weight that you see come up the scale was more so going to be coming from body fat than it is from muscle mass. So we want to obviously maximize body composition, and the way to do that is to lose as much fat as possible. So if you just done like spin classes, although it's great for movement, and if that's all you want to do, that's perfect, that's okay. But if you want to really maximize things, doing some resistance training is going to be really key, so that, let's say, you lose 20 pounds, you're pretty much guaranteeing that 75-80% of that is going to be coming from body fat. Whereas if it was just spin classes, you would end up losing a lot of muscle mass as well, because it's that whole, if you don't use it, you lose it. So if your body doesn't require the use of the muscle itself, like, because you're regularly using it, like in the gym, it's just going to be like, okay, well, I don't need this, and I'm just going to burn this off, because your body will burn off muscle as a source of fuel, especially if it doesn't need that, and it'll try and conserve fat. So if you can stimulate muscle mass through resistance training, that's going to be definitely beneficial. So it's trying to find the best way to incorporate resistance training without it being too much for that specific client. Obviously, if it's somebody comes in and they've never really trained before, and I'm like, yeah, let's go 6 days a week, we're doing arms first, and like and it's like, maybe, I don't know, someone has never really done that before or not really interested in that, it's probably not going to be the best thing for them. So it's just trying to find a plan that works for that individual. Some basic key elements in there, like just some small amount of resistance training. Then apart from that, it's just going to be, how do we get you moving more? Is that just going to be steps? Are we going to do cardio? Is it going to be I don't know, hiking, running, whatever it is, I'm pretty flexible on that. I suppose the key main, or the key factor with most plans that I would create for somebody is some element of resistance training, whether that's gym-based, even home-based bodyweight stuff. We just need to, you know, stimulate the muscle a certain amount, because that will maximize fat loss. Of course, it's going to maximize health as well when it comes to bone mineral density and just generally staving off, you know, sarcopenia, like age-related muscle loss as you get older. Like, everyone should be doing some form of resistance training. So that's quite important for me in terms of making sure people are as healthy as they can be, but also like maximizing that goal, which, you know, 90% or more are the goal is to lose body fat. So that's definitely one. Then the next thing would be understanding like what nutrition approach is going to work for that client specifically. Obviously calories is a non-negotiable, really. Now I don't want to get people overly like stressed about counting calories if they're not really up to that, but realistically, if you're losing weight, whether you're, you know, intuitively eating or, you know, eating healthy, if you're losing weight, it's because you're in a calorie deficit. It's just, you know, it's the laws of thermodynamics. It's the laws of nature. If you drop a penny, it's going to drop to the ground because gravity is going to pull it down. It's just one of those things. You can't escape it. So I always like to be like rational and logical with it. It's like, okay, well, this is a fundamental aspect of weight loss. Just like kind of suck it up, so to speak, and be like, well, okay, I'm just gonna have to tackle it head on. This is my calories, this is what it is. Like, if I want to eat more food, I'm just gonna have to do more activity. So it's definitely one thing I try to explain to clients, because I know it's gonna get them the results, but also I want them to really understand it, because for me that was such a turning point. If somebody were to leave like training, they were training to get good results, but then they didn't have that, just that small understanding that they could change the way that their body looks, or they could influence weight gain or weight loss with understanding their energy balance, I would feel disappointed, to be honest, because that's pretty much like one of the biggest factors that's going to help anybody lose weight. You know, I mean, it's definitely going to be like the key. It's easy to remember as well, you know, I've just got to understand my calories. You might not understand how to calculate that, but there's always stuff online. But I always try and impart that as like, this is the fundamental thing that you need to understand for fat loss. It's like, it's all around calories. And then, you know, how that looks, again, just like the training plan, it's going to look slightly different for each person. Like, one person may love eating, I don't know, PB and J sandwiches, which I've recently discovered, which are really nice. Somebody may hate that. I hate peanut butter. They may be allergic to peanut butter. You know, it doesn't really matter what the foods are, as long as it comes under an understanding that this is your calories and we're going to try and hit this amount of protein. Whatever foods you make that up with, that's completely like what foods you want, you know, however you like to do that, that's up to you. So yeah, I think that's important, because anybody can be perfect on a meal plan, which say maybe they don't necessarily like. You can do that for a week, maybe 2 weeks. Can you do it for 3 months? That's when it gets difficult. So it's more about finding something that works for that individual client that they love, that they can actually maintain it, because you can only lose fat at a certain rate. So the 2 weeks being perfect is not going to move the needle a lot. You need to actually be consistent for a long period of time. So that amount of fat loss that you have, which could be anywhere from maybe 1 pound to 2 pounds per week, you know, 1 pound of fat loss, is you're not going to really notice that hugely on your body unless you're like really like dialed in already pretty lean. You're not going to really notice that. You need to just keep stacking those 1 pounds, 1 pound every week, and then it's like it feels slow, but it's gonna keep going and going and going, and then next thing you know, you're like 30 pounds down the road and you're like, oh wow, like look at the change in my body. So in order to do that though, it has to be something which is something you can maintain and adhere to, because if you can't adhere to it to actually stack those 1 pounds onto 1 pounds, you're never going to get to that end goal, which for most is maybe losing 20, 30, 40 pounds or whatever it might be.
Yeah, that is such a crucial part of the process, is actually doing things that you enjoy, eating things that you truly enjoy, moving your body in ways that you truly enjoy. Like, that enjoyment factor is so huge, especially for the long-term sustainability part of it. Anybody can lose 20 pounds quickly doing some crash diet and just hyper-focusing on cutting calories and doing tons of cardio. And sure, you can get results, but also, like you pointed out, if you don't structure your diet properly, if you don't structure your training properly, then you can actually lose a considerable amount of muscle mass. And we've had so many clients who get before and after DEXA scans who lose a bunch of body fat and lose zero muscle, in some cases gain muscle mass, because they're following the right program that's designed for them. And that is critically important, that you, whether you're working with a coach or you're figuring this out on your own, understanding exactly how to tailor your nutrition and training such that you can accomplish your fitness goals, and if that's fat loss, not lose lean muscle mass while losing body fat, which is totally possible. You can lose 100% body fat from weight loss gains, and this is clearly explained in the scientific literature about how to do this, and it really comes down to having the right resistance training program paired with moderate intake of protein, getting your calories right, not going crazy with cardio, and just having the right plan for you and your goals. So yeah, I love how you bring it to kind of that, the enjoyment factor of that process, because that is absolutely critical to long-term adherence. And if you can't adhere to it, if you can't adhere to the basic principles that you're following for 3 months, where do you expect to be in 3 years or 30 years?
Yeah.
The goal is, how do I build a long-term sustainable lifestyle? Not how do I lose 20 pounds and then ... gain it all back quickly because I'm not actually following something I enjoy. And right when I stop this diet, I'm just going to gain all the weight back. So those are really important points to always keep in mind. And you mentioned peanut butter and jelly. They don't have that in the UK.
I mean, that's not, we'll have peanut butter and we'll have jelly, but we just never really decided to put it together.
Oh, wow. You guys are missing out.
I know, like literally I've missed out my whole life. Obviously you hear about it like on American TV shows and, you know, yeah, it's like PB&J. Obviously in the UK we call it jam. We don't call it jelly. But jam, you might have a jam sandwich, but that would rarely, it wouldn't have peanut butter.
Wow. So just a jam sandwich. I think, I actually don't know the exact point of distinction, but we do have jams and jellies. So I guess I always thought that jam was more natural and jelly was just kind of processed sugary stuff.
No, I'm not too sure.
But I'm not sure where that point is distinguished. I've always just thought jam is kind of a higher quality. Maybe that means it's coming from actual fruit, or I don't know. There's also lots of shady marketing, so yeah, they probably just throw those around.
You could open like a whole can of worms with that one, because then you get into marmalades. Like, what's a marmalade?
I've no idea. Yeah, okay, that's way out of my expert area of expertise.
Yeah, we'll have to consult someone on that one. I have no idea.
All right, well, now you've seen the light, you've seen peanut butter and jelly, you've tasted it, every day moving forward. And that's a really cool thing about understanding nutrition and focusing on a nutrition plan that you truly enjoy. You can have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches every single day and still lose weight and possibly even gain lean muscle simultaneously. And for anybody who is just lived most of your fitness life within the normal kind of diet culture, that seems impossible, or that just seems kind of like a pipe dream, but it's totally possible if you understand nutrition. And like, there would be some, we're not going to put 10 tablespoons of peanut butter on our sandwich, but so there is some moderation that we need to implement. Also, for me personally, I would prefer just having some powdered peanut butter and cutting out the dietary fats, or at least most of the dietary fat, to keep the calories down. And there are lots of ways you can tweak it to make it make sense. But the point is, let's not focus on restriction. Let's focus on how to build a plan that we truly enjoy that we can stick with for life.
Yeah, 100%. And like, obviously, when it comes to calories is the biggest factor. You could be in a calorie deficit and you may have an amazing meal plan, and that's what you want to try and do, because that's going to set you up for success long term. But if you're 1,000 calories in that day and you got 500 calories left for the day, let's say, you know, that's maybe a little bit low, maybe for like a female, but like a male, maybe on 2,000, whatever it is, you've got like 500 calories left and you just want to eat like a brownie and like a vegan chocolate bar. Okay, is that amazingly healthy food? No. But like, can you still do it and lose weight? Yes, because the underlying like principle is energy. So as long as you can match the energy that you need for like your weight loss targets, or like your calorie deficit, doesn't really matter. To a certain extent, you can go into the weeds a little bit with it. But for the most part, unless you're just eating chocolate every day, like you can have anything. You can eat anything. You just have to understand what the calories are in that food, because that's what's going to dictate whether your body's going to be in a deficit for that day. And if you're in a deficit, okay, your body's going to tap into those energy stores on the body, which is fat. Like, fat is just a way for your body to store energy. So that's the biggest factor. It doesn't matter what you eat. You can eat all of your favorite foods. There just obviously has to be, you know, some moderation with that, so that you don't over like consume energy, and essentially reduce your calorie deficit for that day. And even if you do reduce it for the day, okay, I ate maintenance calories for today. Okay, well, I didn't lose fat for one day out of the week. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's long term. If you can just stack those days up where you're in a deficit long term, and you do that for weeks and weeks and months, that's where the results come. Even if there's one or two days along the way where you eat extra calories, it's not really going to matter.
So, Mark, I know you're really big into research. How do you stay up to date with vegan, with plant-based nutrition research, with fitness research? What are you doing to stay up to date there?
So for me, probably the best way to stay up to date is to go onto PubMed. I know it depends on person to person. Like, how do you like to take information in? Some people, the idea of going onto PubMed is just like, whoa, what is going on? This is way too scientific. I do have a little bit more of a scientific background, like studying nutrition at university and, you know, having a degree in nutrition. I got into that, you know, through university, and actually really liked it. I like that logical, like, this is what it is. Like, it's just sheer facts. There's no one's trying to like make anything look pretty or anything with, you know, blogs and articles, which there's benefits to that. But I like to just read the facts. It's like, okay, there's the facts. I don't want to read through like, you know, 20 like paragraphs of like someone trying to make me laugh, or like, I just want to hear the facts. So just give me the facts. So I love like studies for that. But again, obviously you've got articles, depends on what's more palatable for you, if you like to take information in. But again, I'll go back to that. Studies, the best thing if you want to go on and look for this information for yourself, type in plant-based, maybe a certain topic that you want to learn about, go to the settings on the side of PubMed. The last 5 years, systematic review, boom. That's the best way to stay up to date on the literature. Because if you find a systematic review on, let's say, building muscle plant-based, and it was written last year, so you've got like probably at least 5, probably up to even 10 PhD, you know, professors who are researching like every last article and like, you know, scientific literature study and compiling that information into one article, and you can just read that one article. I mean, that's like, how much would you have to pay these people if you wanted to do that? You'd have to pay these people a lot of money, and you can just go onto PubMed and read it for free. So I think that's like the easiest way to get into it, just because you can get all of the experts to basically do the, you know, the footwork or the legwork for you, and they'll pile together up to like 200 plus studies at times, not only collect those studies, but they'll analyze those studies, you know, scientifically, like, or mathematically, or even just like, you know, take out the things that are untrue, mistruths, and they'll actually compile something which is pretty solid in terms of like information. So I think that for me is a big one. And you know, you don't have to be on PubMed every day to stay up to date, but there'll be you know, every now and again, just dive in and just research that. Or if that's something sounds you don't want to do, that it doesn't really sound too palatable to you, follow some online, you know, fitness like influencers, people that are putting out good content, people that like are writing blogs, who are doing that work. So like, let's say if I was writing a blog and I was putting out that type of content, I would jump onto PubMed and I would pull together that information, and then I would, you know, I would write that up for somebody else and maybe water it down a little bit so it's not too, you know, too science based, and then you'd get the information that way. So to stay up to date, like, that's personally how I do it. How someone else might do it might be different, in terms if you're just physically reading it. Then of course YouTube is amazing. It's like I just love YouTube for the information. Obviously there's, you know, there's good things and there's bad things put out there on YouTube, but for the most part there's a lot of great information there. There's a lot of like pretty well researched and, you know, high quality videos that are put together. Obviously there's lots from the vegan gym in terms of like plant-based nutrition. So even just going on there and following like some reputable people in the community and just staying up to date with what they're saying, again, they're going to do a lot of the legwork for you, because that's, you know, that's what they do, that's what they're trying to put out there. So I would definitely say like stay in the loop with people that are doing that specific thing, putting out information, because of course they're going to just put information out to you and it's going to be fed to you because that's part of their business. But if it wasn't that, it would be definitely get used to PubMed and don't look too much into one single study unless it's a systematic review or a meta-analysis, because then that's a study of hundreds of studies. And that's how you would, if you were to look at a study, say this study said, it's like, okay, well, it's this one study that was written in 2002 and it was like researched on like 5 people.
Yeah. N equals 13.
Yeah. N equals 13. It's like, oh, wow, that's going to give us some real good information.
Yeah.
But if you don't understand that, and this is where maybe some of the unethical people can twist things out of the literature, where you get this one study and you can be, well, this said that if you eat soy protein then you're gonna gain like man boobs or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's obviously it's true if you look at that study, but if you look at these 5 or 10 other systematic reviews or meta-analysis with like hundreds of studying hundreds and hundreds of studies, they're going to see that that's not the case. So don't lean too much into one study. Only really think, okay, this is probably true unless it's a really well-researched like systematic review or meta-analysis, because then it's hundreds of studies and not just one study.
Yeah, you need to look at conflicts of interest as well.
Yeah,
and definitely. That's typically when you look at meta-analyses, that's not something that's going to really impact the takeaways.
Yeah.
But if you look at those single studies, you can run into lots of issues with the study design or the funding, and maybe it's designed in a certain way to purposefully get a certain result that the financial backer is looking for. And on PubMed, they will always declare conflicts of interest. I believe it's mostly kind of honest and accurate, but yeah, PubMed is my personal favorite resource as well. But as you said, if that's not palatable to you, then just finding other voices who are sharing information that's rooted in evidence-based research.
Yeah.
That's really crucial. So you're either going directly to the source or you're kind of learning from someone who is going to that source.
Yeah, and there should be sharing some like evidence to back up the claims. If it's just one guy and his dog and he's just like, eat beans because it's good for you. It's like, well, I mean, yeah, he's kind of true, but like, where's like the research behind that? Like, you get somebody that is at least going on that evidence-based approach, because then they're approaching it with some actual facts to back up the claims rather than just anecdotal like evidence. You know, this worked for me, so it'll work for you. It's like, okay, well, but how? I'll say, okay, well, I lost a lot of weight because I followed a calorie-restricted diet. And it's like, okay, well, is there proof that that works? Okay, yeah, here it is. Okay, well, now it's more believable and you'll actually get some more accurate information by looking for those people that are actually out there doing that. I think like Jeff Nippard, like in terms of the fitness, he's a fitness sort of sphere in terms of lifting weights, although he does touch on nutrition as well, not necessarily vegan nutrition, although I might have covered a little bit in the past. But let's say if it's like how to lift weights on a build muscle, you know, he's a good person, as a good example. He researches things quite well. He takes into consideration biases and understands things from a like a sort of a zoomed out perspective, where he can see how there's maybe not necessarily conflicts of interest with those studies, but like study design flaws and other things, and he can pull together lots of different research and then come out with a rational I say a good rationale for the statement that you will then ultimately say, like sumo deadlifts not cheating, or it is cheating, or whatever the video.
Yeah. Yeah, he's firmly in the sumo deadlifts are not cheating group, and I agree with him. But yeah, awesome. This has been great. Mark, really appreciate your time. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share with the audience?
I don't think so. I think I've covered everything I wanted to talk about. I would just say that, just to motivate people, I don't want to be standing here like, oh, I've done it so you can do it too. Like I've done so well. Like I have done well. There's people out there that have done even better than me. I would just like to, hopefully, if there was some person that was inspired by this, or maybe start to think, oh, well, you know, if this guy can do it, you know, maybe why can't I do it? Like, I'm not special. I'm no better than you. And that's the biggest thing, I think, when you see people get in great shape, they'll always think, well, you can do that. That's your body type. That's, you know, you're meant to be in good shape. And it's like, no, I've actually lost a lot of weight. Like, and that could be you too. If you're listening to this because you want to get into like a weight loss plan, definitely believe in yourself, know that you can do it, and don't be shy to reach out to people for help. That's something I never done. I try to do it all by myself, and you know, I kind of done it, yeah, but could I have done it like 10 times faster if I just reached out to a coach?
With a lot less pain.
A lot less pain, a lot less yo-yoing, a lot less psychological torment, should I say. Like, there's a lot of psychological there's a lot of potential negative things that can happen from trying to lose weight, especially if you don't do it in the right way. And if you do it in the wrong way, it can lead into a lot of negative emotional states, let's just say. You know, like things like yo-yo dieting, binge eating disorders, anorexia, orthorexia, bulimia. Like these are real things. So be aware of those things. Obviously not to scare anybody off, definitely not, but I like to be realistic. I like to give people the facts of the matter. I always try and just keep it as 100% as real and as honest, especially with clients. Be like, this is the facts of it, and that is, you know, it's a real thing. But if you're unsure about what to do, definitely reach out to a coach and they'll steer you in the best direction that's right for you. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
But be sure that coach grounds all of their practices in science.
Yeah, 100%.
That's the one little caveat that we always need to be sure to make. So, 100%. Mark, thank you so much for your time. This has been awesome. I really appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Lev.
To get access to some of our best content for free, head over to theVeganGym.com. We've got tons of articles and guides to help you burn stubborn body fat, build lean muscle, and supercharge your health. You can even use our vegan nutrition calculator for free to figure out how much protein, calories, and micronutrients your body needs. Get started right now at theVeganGym.com.